All right, we'll go ahead and try to keep things on schedule here, keep moving along if y'all want to make your way to your seats. Our next speakers here are going to tag team their presentation. We've got Jeff Miller, who's a native of the Plainview area and has been working for years as a crop consultant and founded his own company, Forefront Agronomy, where he's working to help producers remain profitable and adopt new technologies within their operation and translate the data that's being gathered from their fields into actionable information. And he's going to be presenting along with Lloyd Arthur, who's a fifth-generation farmer from the Rawls, Texas area. And Lloyd's won a number of awards over the years and is involved in a number of different efforts. Looks like, I know he collects classic cars, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Lloyd? And looks like he also collects trophies. You must have the trophy room next to the classic car collection. I'll invite y'all up, and we'll try to keep things moving here.
Thank you. It's always an honor to come and speak in front of you guys and share some of the information that TAWC is sponsoring, and just trying to bring, you know, that information to the growers so that we can put these items into action and try to do lots of things from saving water to making more yield to being more profitable as we go through. So today, Lloyd and I are going to tag team this presentation and just talk about some of the variable rate irrigation work that we have been doing on his farm the last 3 years. And got a few slides here at the first to kind of set things up, and then we'll kind of bounce back and forth as we go through. So as we start this thing out, you know, there's several sites that we need to be paying attention to, and this can relate to anything, not just the ag industry. But, you know, as we look at how we integrate technology onto our farms, into our lives, there's several different ways that we can look at that. And one of them is hindsight. So, you know, looking to what happened in the past and being able to make sense of that information and utilize that for maybe future decisions that need to be made. So, you know, things that are available today that would allow you to have some great hindsight, which they always say is 20/20, is, you know, yield data, yield monitor data. You know, if you don't have a yield monitor, you've still collected the yields on that farm. You know what it's doing. You know the history. And being able to use that as a benchmarking tool to move forward. You know, soil moisture, weather data, all these kind of things are great uses to basically set a benchmark of here's where we were and set forth a plan to go where do we want to be. The next part is insight. So what's happening right now? And, you know, there's been a lot of technology come on board over the last few years. But, you know, many of you have been doing this for years. It's walking the fields, driving by, you're checking water, you're observing. You know, those are providing insight to help you make decisions on the go as these things come about. Now, technology's been advanced into your space over the last few years and giving you a little more insight and a little more information to help make those decisions. And, you know, things such as imagery, moisture probes, you know, tissue testing, all that kind of stuff are able to get you there. And then finally, you know, we want to talk about foresight, and that's looking into the future. Where do you want to take your operation in the future? You know, what are your yield? You know, where do you need to be with yields? Where do you need to be with quality? Where do you need to be, most importantly, with profitability going forward? And so, you know, as we look at foresight, and really, you know, this is where kind of the next age of technology is coming in our space, from what it seems, and really providing those modeling tools to be able to take in that information that we collected and look into the future and say, this is when we need, you know, this amount of water. This is when we're going to catch that rainfall event or that wind event or whatever it may be. And, you know, this is when you need that fertility. So being able to use that information to help make those decisions. And really, this all kind of ties together into one system, which leads me into the next piece. And, you know, that's what we're trying to do here with Lloyd is take information that we've had from the past and put it into a system. You know, we understand what his soil types are. We understand what his water capacity is, what crop he's planting, You know, we've collected EC data, we've collected weather data, we've collected all this information. We've done some of that in the past. We're doing some of that right now, as far as moisture probes and walking the fields, imagery, all that kind of stuff. And then we've been able to plug that into a model to start predicting when is this crop going to need that irrigation amount. When is it going to reach this crop stage and those kind of matters. And so kind of marrying all these technologies together is kind of what we're looking at, how we've approached this project over the last 3 years. So, you know, it starts out with having data to utilize, plugging it into a system, analyzing it, being able to, use forecasting to make those decisions, and then, you know, partnering with someone like myself to go out, walk the field, make sure that these models are working correctly, telling us the right things. The nice thing about them is that we're able to make those adjustments on the go. So, that's the power in the system. So, you know, we talk about variability, and the opportunity is definitely in the variability in anything that you do. And most of the, I get in conversations around all the time, we live here on the high plains, we're flat, we all got, fairly similar soil types. And then I go up to the Midwest and there are smaller field sizes, they got rolling hills and trees and creeks and all kinds of stuff going through it and 12 different soil types on it. But it doesn't matter, there's still variability in every piece of field. And really you can look at that with how that crop emerges. You can look at that, how that crop grows off, and you can look at that crop, how it performs at the end of the year. And so, in the past, we've just kind of accepted that it is what it is. Well, now looking to the future, there's an opportunity to take those pieces of that farm that are producing more or less and to be able to adjust your management tactics to it, to get more out of it. From a production standpoint, maybe to save a little bit of money across the board. You know, there's lots of ways to look at that. And, it's all about these variables that we need to start putting plans in place. I've got a couple of comments up there about, if you fail to plan, you'll plan to fail. And, really thinking about as our water is declining out here, you've only got enough water to water a certain amount of acreage under a pit, irrigation system. And so why are we going to go spread that across the whole thing? With the information that we're able to collect, we understand that this is the best spot in the field. It's the most, it reacts the most to inputs. Why wouldn't we put that water there and do something different on the other side of the farm? Maybe looking at something like what Chris, Verrett just spoke about earlier. Lots of different scenarios, and I think the sky's the limit here, but being able to take the data to help you make those better decisions. There's a lot of things that we're trying to do. We can't fix things that are out of our control. We can't fix the weather. We can't fix our, depleting wells. And we can't fix the commodity price, but we do understand what our soil's doing. We understand what that plant needs. And if we can tie that to that, we can be successful. So going through a couple of variable rate irrigation basics, we've incorporated speed control on the pivot that we've been working with Lloyd. And essentially, it's basically speeding up or slowing down that pivot as it goes around. And depending on many factors determined by myself, by the grower, it's kind of whatever goals we're trying to achieve, we'll set those zones up. Having as much information in there as possible helps to build these zones, but most controllers are set up to where you can speed it up. We can break this into pies of, whatever, 1 degree slices all the way to 6 degree slices, and anything in between. And so, we get to a tighter soil type that holds water better. Maybe we want to speed that thing up as it goes across that. We get to a sandier soil, maybe we want to slow it down. And we may want to do those things and vice versa. And it depends on what's going on during the growing season. And it depends on infiltration rates and all those kind of things. But really a fairly economical way to get into the variable rate irrigation game. There are other methods to get in there, but generally this is the kind of the ground floor as guys would be coming off of a flat rate system and wanting to get into more technology. This is really the first step. And it's relatively inexpensive. You've got to have a pivot that has the ability to, to speed up and slow down and be able to load a prescription into it. Some of them already have, your panels already set up that way. Others, we add systems like FieldNet, which is what we're using on Lloyd's system, and he'll kind of talk through some of the advantages of that. But there's lots of uses for that. I'll go through that here in the next slide. But, even where we're doing multiple crops under one irrigation system, having the ability to tailor that to each crop's needs. But our goal is to optimize every acre, every time in every field. And, we're not only looking at that surface variability, but also the depth of the soil. We've got a lot of ground out here that we may have a restrictive layer or something that's holding us back, and knowing that information will help us adjust that irrigation model as we move through it. So a couple of different types of irrigation, variable rate irrigation methods. One of them we call a static, and really it's kind of a, we're going to set a, set a prescription based on a set of parameters that aren't going to change a whole lot. We're looking at soil type, and we know that this is kind of how we're going to work through the season. We've got a windshield wiper. We're going to kind of run it like, basically the same all season. We're going to tweak things as we see fit, based on observations, based on, changing conditions. But, there's not a lot of working back and forth. Whereas a dynamic, variable rate irrigation prescription requires, number one, a lot more information to feed into the system. Generally we want to look at EC data. We'd like to see soil type, yield data, lots of things to be able to start making that decision. But, literally this dynamic model could change every time that irrigation system comes around. And kind of an example there is where we've been irrigating, come across a spot that, we catch a little rainstorm and we filled up that spot over here that's a little tighter soil. Well, we know that this spot over here has got a, the sandier side has trouble, holding on to moisture. So instead of watering through that tighter soil that was holding on to it, we can swing over, hit the sandier part and adjust that. And like I say, literally every time that it rains, as the wind blows, we may want to do something different. There's lots of different applications to that. And really kind of the difference that I see between the static and the dynamic is, we talk about more management, but it's probably more communication between the grower and the person that's working with them is where most of that management comes into, because we want to make sure that we're all seeing the same thing and we all have the same goals. But sometimes we continue to move those goalposts a little bit. I won't go through every one of these, but just some possible uses of variable rate. We've kind of covered a couple of them, maybe it's something as simple as avoiding application in an area like a pivot road or you've got a lake bottom or a old homestead site or something like that, all the way to irrigating every part of the field separately, making those adjustments on the go, on the fly. We've got a different germination rate as we do, early season. Then we catch a rain, we catch a wind. We're doing different things and really, cranking on that thing. But like I said, the difference between the static and the dynamic is probably more about communication between the people that are working together to make sure that we're both on the same page. So there's a couple of steps for implementing VRI, and they're pretty simple. Number one is having a measure of EC on the field is one of the easiest things to do. It identifies soil types and textures, and helps us, look at different organic matters and depressions, where those slopes are, and something as simple as a couple of feet difference can make a big difference with how that water is going to move on that field. So, being able to have that information is great. Number two is building that prescription layer, and I've got guys that try to do this on their own. And I liken this to, working with a personal trainer. I can go to the gym all day long and work out, but I'm not going to push myself as hard as I probably need to see the real results. And that's where partnering with a certified water agronomist to be able to come in and make those determinations that's using the data to be able to make those prescriptions is a great resource. The next thing is schedule that irrigation as it needs to happen. And then monitor that field during the season. And we can do that multiple ways, from a sense, a probe out in the field to visual inspection to imagery. There's lots of ways to go about that or some culmination of those. So fairly simple to set up if you've got the capability on that irrigation system to make that happen. The whole idea here is to keep our eyes focused, forward. And I've always said, a race car driver spends most of his time looking forward, and that's why he goes fast. If he was looking back, he'd probably be running into things. And so, keep in mind that performance is past, and there's nothing we can do about that, but we can take what we've learned in that and look forward. So my next slide's got kind of a rough diagram of something that I kind of threw together on this, but just thinking about your field from a variable standpoint is that, you may have a field that grows 2.5 bale cotton. And there may be a part in that field that grows 3 bale cotton. And there may be a part that grows 1 bale. And, unless we, get out and start measuring things, we don't really know why that is. But after we've gone out, we've measured, we've understood what's happening underneath, we may, that 2.5 bale ground may be all that it's going to do. It has maximized its ability to use the inputs that you've put at it. But you may have that spot that yields 3 or 4 bales over here that, who knows what the top end potential is on that, because it is, we're underfeeding it, we're underwatering it, whatever the case may be. And then, there's other places that maybe we can save on some inputs because there's, we're overfeeding it. So that's kind of the idea of where we're going with variable rate irrigation, and then as it relates to other inputs as well. So just kind of a depiction of what we got going on here, just different, you're out there harvesting a field and you've got the yield monitor going all over the place, or that you're filling up that basket, quicker on this pass than you were on the last pass, and I don't know, hopefully you've asked yourself, I wonder why that is. And so being able to, kind of take the modern-day farming approach, being able to use data to come in and understand how do we need to work through that? Do we need to put more water on one spot and less water on a different spot? And then, maybe we can work into seed and fertilizer behind that. So I'm going to turn it over to Lloyd and kind of let him give some of his insight.
Thank you, Jeff. And I want to say it's been a pleasure working with Jeff the last 3 years. His knowledge has been very helpful in my farming operation, and I hope a lot of things that we have learned these last 3 years will be able to share on your crop. I want to say first that the variable rate irrigation, it doesn't matter if you're conventional till, no-till, cover crops, as Mr. Verrett is. I think a variable rate irrigation will work on your farm. And it's some of the technical things that could make you money, and it's some of the little things that you just think of, and I want to share some of those today. But one of the things, advantages of having variable rate irrigation, is the notifications that you can set up to go to your smartphone. And I think one of the things that we can do as being good stewards of our natural resources and water is to be more efficient with what we got. Everybody knows that we're running out of water. Our aquifer is being depleted. But being smart and being efficient with what we have, I think, would send a message to the caretakers that will be taking care of the land in the future. So I just want to point out a few things with variable rate irrigation that has come simple. Here is a notification that I got on a Friday afternoon about 9:12 p.m. I was already home. Ready to go to bed, but something happened to that pivot. Now, if I hadn't had the variable rate irrigation system tied to this pivot, I wouldn't have known this, and whatever had gone wrong would have happened all night long. But as you can see here at 9:12, I got a notice that I'd lost pressure. We'd gone down to 4 PSI. It actually stops the pivot from moving because I have an automatic shutdown on there. So I went out and investigated. And you can see at 9:12, we got the notice. It has already given me other things that are happening along that pivot. So this pivot actually has one motor running on it. It's a natural gas motor. So I assumed on my way to that field that my motor died. Well, I was wrong. When I got there, the motor was still running. But it wasn't running properly. It actually had a miss. I was only running on 5 cylinders. So you can see how much pressure I lost when I normally run around 10. So If I hadn't had this notification, my motor was going to be running, could have had harm to the motor itself. I wasn't putting out ample much water to my crop. Plus, that pivot had stopped, basically going to be overwatering during that period. Well, I didn't even kill the motor. A lot of us do this. Probably shouldn't, but old school. I'd pull that spark plug out, put a new one in, revs back up, gets back up to normal RPM. Well, like you can see, from 912 to 924, about 12 minutes, we were already building pressure back up. So not only does variable rate irrigation give you the ability to take care of notifications and alerts to be more efficient with your water. Let me give you one more scenario. Here's on a Sunday afternoon. I got a notification at 6:59, already at the house. Wasn't planning on going back out. But I got a notification that number 32 has stopped wet. We still had full pressure, but something had gone wrong. There again, we did not want to have that pivot in that one spot all night long, overwatering, and then not using that water on other parts of the crop. What I had found out is I had a drive shaft come off, and the pivot got out of alignment. I went and got my rig, went out and fixed that pivot, and you notice within almost a little over 30 minutes' time, we had it running again. That's being more efficient with the water we have. I think that's a plus to be more efficient with the resources that we have. Also out in our fields, we have underground moisture probes. We have crop matrix. Here is our east and west pivot that we'll be telling more about later on in our study. But we're showing here our optimal water range. We have the refill, the optimal, and the full. And at this time, both of ours is in optimal mode. Now, but the difference between the east and west pivots is there's no difference other than I share the same water with each pivot. I don't water both of them at the same time. I go from one to the other. So what we have done here in this pivots is one of these, the west pivot, has 40-inch drops. The east pivot has 80-inch drops. And we have so much slope on these farms that we'll show in slides to come the reasoning why we're doing that. But we're wanting to keep it in this optimal area here so that we won't get behind during the hot growing season. And as you can see here, we're in the west pivot here, and you can see each time it goes around, we have an irrigation, and we're almost getting it to the full range. And then from this area right here, we swapped and went to the east pivot. Just as we got below down into the refill range, we went back into that pivot and built it back up. And then right here, you can see as we slope down in that September 1 time frame. It's also important to know how much water that you have available for that plant to use. And I think it's more critical during the end of season so that you're not overwatering late to causing production issues or quality issues. So and you don't have to have one on every field. You can just have one or two because they all will give you the same information as you know the outlays of each one of your farms. Here is farm number 12. This is where we've had 3 years of research and data collected on our variable rate irrigation. We've always run a flat rate to the north, and down here is where we do our variable rate. Each pivot has different soil textures within one side or the other. There's variable differences under pivot. We always say they're flat in West Texas, you can see for 30 miles, but there's always some slope on some of these pivots. I'm going to turn it over to Jeff because he is wonderful in giving the technical details of VRI and what we're doing on this pivot and what we have done and hope to do in the future.
So Lloyd, how much water do you have on this pivot?
300 gallons. 120 acres.
On 120 acres. And so, you know, we've looked at this over the last couple of years several different ways, and we've split it up, you know, one way or another. But what kind of made the most sense was splitting it in half, because we've got a terrace down here. We've definitely got some different soil types going on, and it pulls out in the EC map that we were able to collect. And so, you know, that's kind of what we were doing. And basically what would happen is we would schedule irrigations as we came across the south side, based on what the probe was telling us, and then we would variably apply that according to what our soil types were and visual observations. And then we would get around to the, you know, to the halfway mark, and then Lloyd would just put on an inch like he normally would. And so this pretty well, you know, worked all the way through the season. But talking about a dynamic piece, I start noticing late in the season that that we're going backwards a lot faster on the flat rate than we were on the VRI. And so, you know, I called Lloyd, we talked through it a little bit, and we slowed that pivot down to put on an inch and a quarter on the last couple of passes as we were coming across that flat rate, because it was needing it. It was starting to suffer visually, and the soil profile was showing it that we weren't pulling out the moisture that we should have, where the VRI was hanging in there. And it's hard to see up here, but, you know, that VRI application ranges from 0.82 inches to 1.08. So we're talking, you know, what is that, 0.2 of an inch difference. We're not talking big differences. And talking to somebody earlier, you know, for us to win in this business, it's not about hitting home runs. It's about hitting singles. It's about getting on base. I don't even care if you get hit by a ball. As long as you can get on base, then you got a chance. And so it's these little bitty things that add up in the end. So we're not variably applying this, you know, big, huge amounts, but it all adds up over the course of the season, and it's really impactful on the plant with how we see the rooting depth. So just kind of going into some of the results, looking at over a 3-year period, we've averaged about 0.93 inches per application pass on the variable rate versus 1 inch on the flat rate. And that's kind of come out averaging over the last 3 years about 7.2 inches applied on VRI and 7.6 inches on the flat rate. So we have seen a water savings even in a water limited environment. I do think as there are systems that may have more water available, that I think this could be expanded as well. I'll let Lloyd kind of go through kind of back to what we were doing on the variable rate, just kind of his thoughts on that.
Well, it's going to be kind of hard to see here, but there is color changes right here in the prescription of the VR rate, and you can see that over here in the difference of degrees of the pivot. And we're not changing much up, just like Jeff said, but we're applying the water and the water needs to the soil type and or their soil elevation. So it's a big plus, and I know a lot of folks have gone to watering half pivot and rotating back, and someday I may have to get to that point. But today I'm not. I have that pivot, I have that investment out there, and I want to utilize that land. Someday I may change my mind and not all on all fields at once. But I think the key picture is here is to place that water where your best production is going to be or your best return on investment. And I think this will work for any type of conventional till, no-till, cover crops, and I have adapted. I will say this. This is the third year that I've had this on this one pivot, and after the first year, I have it, and now I have it on every pivot I have. I'm sold on it. And I'm one of those that says if technology's either got to pay for itself or save you money or both. And I think the technology's there that each somewhere on every one of your farms you will find a benefit from it. Even with small amounts of water, we're seeing results here that we didn't think that we would see.
So digging into the results a little bit, this is a 3-year average on Lloyd's farm here, looking at our flat rate versus VRI. And so we harvested these separate, ginned them separate, and appreciate all those that have helped along with that. But over the 3-year period, we've averaged 777 pounds on the flat rate and nearly 900 pounds on the variable rate. and so giving us 115 pounds difference. Now, I don't know how many of you guys would turn away 115 pounds for, and then actually do it on less water, but hopefully that resonates. Looking at loan rates, they weren't significantly different, but there were some improvements slightly, and most of those came with really how the plant was conditioned for harvest. Seemed like it defoliated better, you know, dropped leaves a little bit better, and I remember one year there was some micronaire differences pretty significant between the variable rate where it was better versus the flat rate. But, you know, overall we weren't, you know, drastically affecting the loan rates. As we go in there, we're seeing an increase in yield, and then putting this on kind of a, you know, standard balance sheet, you know, looking at those advantages, you know, 115 pounds, getting about $70 an acre back into Lloyd's pocket, and then I got to get in there a little bit and work through, you know, probes, what it costs to put the VRI, the field net cost, you know, these are what it was, what it cost per year. Getting us at $45 an acre back into Lloyd's pocket. But then we look at this water savings of 0.4 inches. And you may not think that that's very much. But, you know, it costs us $8 an inch. That's $3.20 per acre that Lloyd can put back in his pocket. We're getting closer to that $50 bill. So, you know, you talk about, you know, technology being able to help you, you know, make money, help you save money. I think that we're doing both of those in this situation, and we've been able to prove that over the last 3 years in a water limited environment where people said that it wouldn't work. The other thing that I want to point out is you know, 0.4 inches. I was doing some math last night on the way home from a meeting, and you know, walking through an airport, everybody's drinking bottled water, and so I started doing the math to that, and that bottled water runs anywhere from 2 to 4 cents an ounce, which makes that water about $2.53 a gallon. And if we were able to save 0.4 inches on a pivot, it would equal about $1.3 million worth of value for that water. You know, if I look at my Lubbock water rates, it's about a cent a gallon. You know, it's about $10,000 to somebody here locally. But even more impactful was looking at the water savings that we had on that one single pivot would be enough to provide water to my family for the entire year. And so, you know, not only are we talking about, you know, helping producers, but how do we help our communities? And what, you know, what kind of impact can we have on that? What kind of impact will that 0.4 inches have if we do that over a 10-year period? That gains you another year in farming on that ground. That, you know, that gives you the ability to spread, you know, spread some things around. So there's real impact here with what we're trying to do, and putting things together. So you may ask, well, how is all this happening? You know, you're not putting on that much different water amounts. You know, really, your timings are fairly accurate, and it really boils down to giving that plant what it needs in that particular spot in the field. And you know, I've got 4 kids, and they all eat differently, even though we try to throw out chicken nuggets to them every day. And so, you know, it's the same thing on your farm. You know, you've got spots in the field that eat differently, and being able to match up to that is going to give you the most optimization of those inputs. And so, you know, what we're seeing is just different rooting patterns, different water use patterns, and it's by how we're matching up to those plants' needs. And also kind of forcing those kids or those plants to go down and mine the water that's down there, you know, and it's kind of like spanking your kids. If you let them get away with it, they're going to run all over you. If you get them back in line every now and then, you know, hopefully they're going to be a stronger person as they grow older. And that's kind of what we're doing here, is disciplining our plants to be able to go and fight for what they're looking for. And it'll make them stronger in the end to handle that stress that we get in August. Looking at some of the individual sensors that we're looking at, you know, we've got VRI up here and flat rate here, and we don't see a whole lot of movement as we come across with these irrigation events. But then all of a sudden, as we get here into the 1st of August, you know, those roots start taking off. And so what we've done, we've given it just enough moisture in the top to keep it, you know, keep it somewhat happy, but it realizes that's not quite enough. I'm going to have to dig down a little deeper. versus, you know, the flat rate down here. You know, we kept our roots fairly shallow pretty early. We did, you know, we did see some movement down in August whenever that heat hit. But what happened is they've shallowed back up, and most of our water use was coming out of the top foot as we came around. Whereas these roots stayed active all the way through the season, and that really added the extra pounds at the very end. Here's some aerial imagery that we had flown in August this year from Cirrus Imaging, and just kind of some, you know, some other technology that is available out there to help make some decisions, you know, verify what you've been doing, provide those insights during the growing season. And, you know, we, once again, we had variable rate on this side, flat rate on here, and you're starting to see the visible effects of that watering scheme. And you know, we're talking maybe a quarter of an inch difference in application rate. So what we did after we flew this, between this and what the probes were saying, is we turned around and we increased our application rate on the flat rate to try to bring things up. I wish we'd have flown this a little bit earlier and caught it, and we would have made some adjustments maybe even earlier. But, you know, it's a great way to kind of integrate, you know, all forms of technology. So that's kind of, you know, how our variable rate versus flat rate project's been going. 2 years ago, we, you know, we worked with Ferris Hightower, with Lindsay, and Lloyd and TAWC to kind of look at, you know, some different nozzle spacings on these pivots under a limited water environment, and wanted to, you know, make those comparisons. So as Lloyd said, he's got one pivot that is on 80-inch spacings. The pivot to the west of that is on 40-inch spacings. And we've made those observations over the last 2 years, and I'll kind of let him dig through some of the things that he saw.
Thank you, Jeff. Once again, these two pivots are 68 acres. They're six-tower pivots, but they're using the same well source, same water source. But what we are wanting to do is, after we've learned to slow these pivots down so that we can get that water percolating into the root zone, we have found that in some pivots like these, it's hard to do without runoff. And I will have a slide here in a minute to explain why. But as you can see right here, we slowed down, and here's the one with 40-inch drops. There's something here in every drop. So we're getting water on each side of the plant. Now, you see this smaller two rows right here? What's happening there? Well, that's where the pivot track is, and there's no water going down that right there. So we can tell right there that those two rows are deficit of moisture because we're not applying the moisture. Beforehand, on 80-inch drops, I would have to go around so fast because of the runoff, I would get him to the pivot tracks and get my pivot stuck. So I wasn't getting the water pushed down into the root zone. So what we did was, when we put the next pivot in, we put drops in every 40 so that we could slow that pivot down. And here's why. The east and west pivot, you look at the elevation. There's a good 11 foot from the low to the high on both of these. And where we're suffering is right here in these spots here, especially right here, is we can't hold that water to the land. The soil texture of that is basically the same all the way around. But that slope, we cannot hold the water. Now, we started putting cover crops on here. We're using a rye or wheat to cover so we don't have the soil erosion. But still, even with that, we had issues. So we always say everything in Texas is flat because you can see 30 miles away, but not always so. Because just right here in 68 acres, there's 11 feet difference. So what we started to looking at, and we're seeing in yield increase, is with the 40-inch drops, because we're able to slow that pivot down, the water is going into the root zone instead of running off or keeping us from running fast enough to keep it from getting stuck. Here again is some imagery. It shows exactly what we're talking about. And I think this is one of the things that Jeff just kind of teased me with, and this is something that I want to look at more in the future. Just like Jeff said a while ago, I think there's some things here that we could have seen a lot quicker than what you could just walking and going out in the field, walking the field. But as you can see right here, in these areas right here and down here, where I'm always having to apply a growth regulator because the water pools at variable rate, we can get here and we can kind of speed up. And also in areas down here and here with the 40-inch drops here, you can tell the difference. Here's the 40 and here's the 80 on the basically the same type slope that we're able to keep the water into the root zone versus here where we have the 80-inch drops. So I think it's a big sale that if you have a pivot with this amount of slope, that it may be advantageous for you to put those extra drops on there so that you can slow it down to get that water down into the root zone.
You may want to back up and make a comment. Yeah,
The other thing that we did here last year, we just kind of treated them the same. This year, we decided to incorporate variable rate irrigation prescription here. And even though this spot is blue, that's, leaf canopy temperature layered over NDVI, if I'm not mistaken. But we were actually putting on less water here as well. So, but we've got a better water holding capacity. That plant was able to pull it up because it was more available and it was able to cool itself off. Where over here, we did the 80-inch drops with just a flat rate. So, bouncing things back and forth as best as we could. And probably, we slowed this pivot down some. But still, I think that, Lloyd, we could probably slow it down some more. It's just a matter of getting comfortable with what we're doing. And then, the complexities of bouncing it between both pivots. But it's been a really interesting project to work at and really prove some theories that have been around for a while. And want to appreciate Ferris for kind of helping us out on this project.
And if I can make a quick comment, back in 92 when I got my first pivot, we were kind of under the impression to go around every 3 days and make sure that wherever it was that day, the next time it come around be at night so the evaporation loss would kind of equal out. Well, this year, our variable rate pivot, it only went around 7 times the whole year. That's how slow we were running it. Think about that. Wear and tear on a pivot. If it going around in 3 days versus 7 days, over the lifetime of that pivot, you talk about wear and tear on your equipment as being an expense on repairs, too.
So kind of looking at the data that we've got put together between the 40-inch spacing with VRI and the 80-inch spacing that was not, was a pretty significant amount of pounds there, 731 to 563. A slight increase in loan rate, but, really looking at, nearly $100 an acre back into gross profits back into Lloyd's pocket by just making those couple adjustments, and I didn't get the dollar figure for what it cost to convert that pivot to 40-inch drop spacing, but that would definitely need to be factored in there. And then pretty much your VRI and probe costs and controller cost would be added in there as well, but still plenty of wiggle room to work with to see that kind of a increase on a pretty tough couple of years that we've been playing with this. A two-year average, we've averaged about 10 inches of irrigation on this particular system that we've been working on. And like I said, I think there's some adjustments that we can make there going forward. Once again, looking at some of the data without digging into it too awful deep, but what we were able to do is put that amount of water out there on the field and drive that water into the root zone. And you would think that on the 80-inch spacing we're putting more volume in a smaller area and we'd be able to drive it in there, but with the infiltration rates that we have currently, that's just not going to happen. What we're going to end up doing is running that water off. So slowing that water down a little bit, putting it on every row and getting it in the root zone where it can take advantage of it immediately, that's what we're finding, is that we're getting it into the ground much quicker. It's not exposed to evaporation, to runoff, any of those kind of things, and we're able to take advantage of it instead of letting it go off somewhere else. And so we just consistently kept getting our roots deeper and deeper and deeper, and really helped us get through that August September time frame, as according to the the imagery, if you remember that, you know, versus the 80-inch spacing. We didn't really get any kind of activity deeper into the profile until we were, you know, deep into the season. And then we finally got some more water in the profile in September when we didn't really need it. So I'm going to let Lloyd kind of finish this out with other uses for VRI that he kind of sees, and then I'll close it out.
Thank you, Jeff. We've been talking about a lot of variable rate irrigation, but along with this technology, there is some other savings. Everybody's seen that. This is your pivot when it's going across a turn row. Everybody probably needs to be down that turn row putting in more fertilizer in that tank just as it crosses. You're never there. How many gallons do you think we waste? That's going across that turn row as an inch. That was at our flat rate. Well, you can program your pivots now to do this when it crosses a turn row. Just because you have the ability to change that degrees, it doesn't matter if it comes there during the day or the night, you don't have to be there. But there is a large amount of savings are being more efficient from this spot right here to this spot right here. This is actually 100% going across, and this here is, like I said, was putting out that rate of 1 inch on the flat rate. There's a big savings right there. That probably, in my opinion, in 1 year will pay for your system. Other things is being able to germinate your seed. None of my pivots ever had a stop or a manual return or windshield wipe on them. Now I have the ability to do that out in each field. So what I have been able to do is plant one side on a dry year like 18 was in 19 versus 11 when I tried to plant the whole thing and couldn't get none of it emerged because the water was getting away from me. So here's another advantage that you have with variable rate technology. Let's talk about variable rate fertilization in that field. You have the ability to turn that pump on and off in each degree, just like you do speeding it up or slowing it down to apply water. This pivot right here has a tremendous slope, probably about a 10-foot drop on this quarter of this pie right here. The water always kind of goes down and pools here, and we're always having to do that one spot with a growth regulator because it gets so rank. We don't need to fertilize there. So what do I do here? Here in the dark spots right here, the fertilizer's on, and where it's not, I turn it off. So therefore, I'm able to turn on and off and adjust my fertilizer as the water's going by as well. Now, I can keep my speed and depth of my water up. I can just turn on and off the pump. Now, can I change the pump rate? No. Until that technology evolves, but whatever you have your pump set on, your injection pump, you're able to turn it on and off throughout that field 1 degree at a time. So there, again, is a savings that you can have on saving on fertilization, on your fertilizer, or apply more fertilizer where you need it. Now, right here is my turn rows. I turn it off. I don't want to fertilize those turn rows.
All right, kind of closing things out, just looking at just some other scenarios that we've been able to use variable rate. One of them is a windshield wiper prescription, and this is probably one of the more popular ones. You know, historically what we have happen is, you know, whenever you're irrigating, you come to the stop, you turn around, reverse, and go back, and, you know, there's all kinds of different strategies where guys are speeding it back up, guys are just coming back normal. But what ends up happening is we end up usually overwatering the ends and kind of starving the middle. And so what we've been able to do is write a prescription to be able to maybe speed things up as you're coming into a turn, and then whenever you back up, you slow it down, and then we'll make adjustments as we go through the rest of the field. And really what we're able to do is reduce the amount of stuck pivots. We're more even application of water. And this really works great in scenarios where you've got cotton and corn or something like that on either side of the pivot, and you're taking care of one crop during a critical stage. You're able to, every time you're coming across it, you're putting on a crop specific amount of water. You're not just speeding it up 100%, burning up gear drives and everything like that. So, this, like I said, this is one of the more popular things that we get asked to do is just try to put that water out more evenly. The other thing is, you know, you've seen this graph before, but, you know, the wind blows out here a little bit. maybe we want to do some different things as different things are happening during the season. So maybe slowing down or speeding up on a portion of the field to offset the wind event. Maybe you catch a hailstorm on part of it and halfway through the season, and you don't need to put as much water on that side of the field as you do another. There's lots of applications here, and really kind of boils down to that, like I said, that dynamic piece. And we see something happening, and we need to, make an adjustment as it's happening, instead of thinking, man, I wish I'd have done something different whenever we get to the end of the season. And then finally, being able to match up with variable rate seeding, variable rate fertility, and those kind of technologies have been around a long time. You buy a planter that's automatically loaded up with the ability to do it, whether you take advantage of it or not. But, my question to you is, why do we variably apply our seed, but we're putting the same amount of water on that? Wouldn't you imagine that less seed would take less water, more seed would take more water? So why don't we get our water fixed, and then we can match our seed and our fertility needs up to that? So really, as you can see, I hope that you take home that there's a lot of different applications that variable rate provides for you, and we've shown real-world results here of putting money back into your pocket, both through savings and better production. So I'll close it out. Any questions? I'll be around. Lloyd will be around most of the day. So if we don't catch something here, be glad to open it up for questions.
I'd like to make
Let Lloyd.
Like I say, I was approached with a TAWC to do this 3 years ago, and I was intrigued what we would see, but I've seen some things that I probably wouldn't have seen if we hadn't had this program to look at, and I think sharing those. I would like to invite you anytime this next growing season to come out to the place. Both of these locations are within eye distance of each other. We're always running, or I'm always doing something on my other fields, trying to make them more efficient, more profitable. But anytime that you are driving through Rawls, Texas, I don't mind you stopping by. Let's talk about it, because sometimes I might get better ideas from you on something that you're doing on your place that I may not be doing right to change up. So exchange of ideas. So I invite you out to the place anytime. They do have field walks and things. Hopefully you can make those. But if you can't, get a hold of me somehow or another, and I'd be glad to give you a personal tour or whatever of the place and what we're doing and talk one-on-one with you. Also, as you can see, some of the things that I explained are pretty simple. That's some of the things that I caught on. But in some aspects, it takes somebody like a Jeff, and I really appreciate his expertise in telling me. I've had crop consultants before, and I still have them in other places for other purposes, and they're good. I like what they do. But Jeff was the first consultant that ever told me, don't start up watering yet. And when you have somebody like that, we're always saying we always go out there and water too quick, get started too quick. He's the first one that's always told me. This last year, we hadn't started our pivots up because we had ample planting moisture, and I'd started a few of them up trying to get the kinks out of it, and I put out there and I hadn't read his email, and he said, no, don't start till next week. Well, you know what I do? I go out there and stop it, but at least I got the kinks out of it. But someone like him, and I appreciate his expertise, and Rick and your folks, we're all learning together. But again, I want to extend the invitation to come out anytime. Any questions? Jeff's here to answer them.
So I think the question is, with respect to the slowing down on the 40-inch versus the 80-inch, David's asking Lloyd if he's going to convert that other pivot to 40-inch spacings. Is that correct?
Yes, I've already seen enough results that I would like to convert it. I think what will happen with a with a short crop this year. We will take one more year of data. I think the more data that you have, the better off your results will be to share. But I have already talked to the pivot folks about putting that on, and then a couple of other pivots that has some similar slopes of doing that. The only drawback, you know, in West Texas wind is you have those hoses sitting there swinging and there's more repair. But I think that is a simple fix, one-time maintenance every year of putting those hoses back on versus the water savings and then the potential of the crop that you're producing. Because only our water is only going to keep dropping off. We know that. But just think, if we'd had some of this technology back when my dad was farming, just think of the results that we would have had. You know, he was plowing behind a mule when he was a kid. And, you know, he ended up with a, you know, an 8-row cotton harvester. You know, what are we doing now? You know, I was working in the, tromping in the back of the trailer back when I started, and now we're having modules that, you know, make their own modules. So technology has advanced. There again, I just would like to say, if it's making you money or saving you money, that technology is probably worth it. If it's not, it probably won't last long in the system.
So I think the second half was about whether we could slow it down some more, and obviously that's going to be dictated by the cropping season and your soil types and all those kind of things. But yes, I do think that there's probably some more room to be able to do that, at least based on last year's results. So hopefully that answers it.